Now, here's some advice for our next guest, from our next guest, and it's advice he gave to the graduating class at Boston University's Sargent College.
If you find a place that lets you learn and grow and build your self-respect, even if it's not directly on the path you've laid out for yourself, stay there. And did I say wear sunscreen? Wear sunscreen.
That, of course, was the voice of Corby Comer, who joins us now on Zoom. He's Executive Director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, Senior Editor at The Atlantic, and a Senior Lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. Welcome, Corby.
Well, hello, Jim. Hello, Mark.
Hey there.
Hello. So, Corby, were you nervous? I mean, you had to give the commencement speech to the Sargent School of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences, which is up your alley, of course, but it's a little nerve-wracking to give a commencement speech, right?
Well, I was on a jumbotron. There were thousands of people there between the almost 500 students that are within one of 17 schools at the vast Boston University and Mighty. But they were all so dedicated. They were all so happy to be graduating. So were their families. The attention they paid, I was shocked they didn't cough for 16 minutes. Really shocked. And let me thank everyone there for not coughing. I couldn't believe it. But it was just a huge honor. And the excitement of those students, the dedication of the faculty, the number of students who hugged the faculty members, welcoming them on stage one by one. The fact that the faculty members had obviously practiced in advance, so nobody struggled over a student's name. I found that hugely impressive. There were almost 500 students. It felt like the hugest honor to be there.
Well, congratulations to you, Corby, and we're glad we got to hear a part of it. You know, we heard your words, but sadly, we apparently will never hear the words "endless shrimp" again. Here is a TV ad. It's from maybe a decade or so ago for Red Lobster's Endless Shrimp deal. Here it is.
During Endless Shrimp at Red Lobster, you can have something decadent with something spicy, then something crunchy, then something new, like wood-grilled shrimp with a tangy teriyaki glaze. And after that, you can do it all again. It's Endless Shrimp. Indulge in endless choices of your favorite shrimp dishes. While the shrimp are endless, this offer isn't. Come in now for the best value of the year at Red Lobster.
I have to say, Corby, it is hard to keep a straight face when you're reading a story in the business section of a newspaper, hearing that while the reason for a major national chain to file for bankruptcy is because of an endless shrimp program. But that is what happened, isn't it?
Well, it's one of the reasons there was a death knell to the Red Lobster chain. It was bought by a Thai seafood supplier. Thailand has an enormous farmed shrimp industry. About 80% of U.S. seafood is imported, and I think most of the shrimp. And the problem was that the owner obliged all of the franchisees to buy only its farmed shrimp, not competitors. So they were locked into expensive shrimp. They weren't able to end that endless shrimp promotion. And it's one of many reasons that they just couldn't stay economically afloat. Another one was that a guy named Darden, became a mighty empire in 1968, founded Red Lobster. It owned its own real estate. But fairly recently, it sold all of its real estate.
Yeah.
It went into a lease situation. So all of the franchisees were subject to high rents, lost its financial stability. So it was a series of different owners and very bad financial decisions.
You know, let me say, Marjorie and I are not business experts. I know it may shock you, but I think it was Marjorie who said at our prep meeting this morning, so why didn't they end the
endless
shrimp
promotion? Exactly.
If that was what was causing them all this problem. You have an answer to that, Corby, please?
No, I guess the Thai seafood supplier only looked at owning Red Lobster as a way to pump out its seafood and oblige people to have long, expensive contracts to buy it.
Yeah, I can see endless breadsticks, endless salad, endless bread.
That's very good
but,
analysis.
You know, they're cheaper, let's just say, than endless shrimp. I mean, it just seems like for $20, that seemed kind of crazy, I think.
I mean, yes, it was just a higher profit margin. But when I read that the owners weren't allowed to buy contracts cheaper from other suppliers, Of course they're going to be choked and by endlessly rising rents.
I have to say, Corby, I'm a little disappointed you do not see the humor in this. Now, we never favor a bankruptcy because it may hurt the workers, and we are pro-worker, of course. But let me repeat for the third time, the fact that it was Endless Shrimp that brought Red Lobster to its knees.
Doesn't seem right, does it?
Or? I don't know. I felt incredibly guilty at the fabulous Boston University reception, mostly for trustees and donors, that I got to crash because I'd spoken. And I went straight for the jumbo shrimp cocktail in the very back of the tent.
Was it Endless Shrimp there or no?
It was Endless. And okay. I parked myself there and I kept trying to hide the evidence of all of the various
That is tough.
Because, you know, Jim, how often do you get Endless Shrimp?
Exactly.
You don't get it all the time. That's absolutely true. But I think we have to ask ourselves.
Oh, by the way, this is a great point. Jamie makes a note, the highlight of your annual Christmas party
is
Endless Shrimp.
Well, it is not actually Endless Shrimp.
Oh, it's not Endless?
No, because people, like a swarm of honeybees, you know, the moment you bring the shrimp on, everybody's like, soups down. So it's not Endless because I have to pay thousands of dollars for Endless. But I do have quite a few shrimp at my Christmas
party. By the way,
just
so you, you may be worried, Corby, but do not worry. At the end of the show, we're going to talk to our listeners about the whole concept of Endless Shrimp and why it causes people to do things they might not otherwise do.
Yeah.
So please stay tuned.
But I think at this point we need to juxtapose Endless Shrimp doing in, or at least bankrupting, the lobster place.
Red Lobster.
And America, I can't believe anybody's going to buy this, but a $400 pineapple called the Ruby Glow. People are going to sell this in a store and expect that people are going to pay that for a pineapple?
I don't think they will. But when you read the story about a fancy, super sweet pineapple being bred in, I believe, Costa Rica by Del Monte for a very beautiful color and its distinctive red exterior and sweetness for $395.99. If you read later in the story, you can get pink-fleshed pineapple for $15 to $19. It doesn't seem to be this exact one. But, you know, Del Monte is saying, sure, this is going to be a luxury item like caviar. I don't believe it. I will be very interested to see if they actually market it because the supply is very limited now. The story said that boxes of 8 strawberries for $50, each one perfect and incredibly sweet, and Sumo Citrus, which a lot of us have bought.
I
paid $3.50 per Sumo Citrus because I like the oranges, which are crossed with pomelos and sweet mandarin oranges. You know, they're very good. I don't think $395 will ever fly, but here we are mentioning the name Del Monte on the air.
Well, that's true.
Giving them publicity for this kind of stunt of us.
Now, I consider myself somewhat of a pineapple expert.
You are really good. You know exactly what it's
I perfected the when do you open the pineapple
thing. What is the trick?
It's just squeeze them.
Squeeze the pineapple.
Sometimes you're fooled because the one end of the pineapple, if you get a big one, which is why I try not to get huge ones, will be still hard and the bottom will be soft. So that can
be a problem. If it's the green thing, it comes out easily.
I don't think that's, I don't think that works at all. I think it's the squeezing of the pineapple. But, you know, if you perfect, as I would modestly say that I have,
that's modest,
when to cut into the pineapple.
That's great.
They're as sweet as they can be, and it's full of juice, and they're so full of juice, and they're just fantastic. I can't see how this Ruby Glow pineapple could possibly improve on the pineapples I cut in my own kitchen, Corby.
Pretty powerful talking there. What do you think, Corby?
Would you ever buy a knockoff so-called cashmere sweater that really felt just as soft as a big designer label at Neiman Marcus, but, you know, cost a fraction of it? Or would you rather have that imprimatur of the label and know you paid a lot of money and indulge yourself?
Yeah, I probably would get the knockoff myself. Yeah, I would.
What I would prefer is Endless Shrimp. Followed by Endless Pineapple. That would be what I... You know, on a serious note, well, I guess that is a serious note if you're going to spend $400 for a pineapple. There's a story in the Boston Globe, why Massachusetts grocery prices are rising so fast. And it says, grocery bills in Massachusetts, especially Boston, have been rising faster than in most of the country, even as overall inflation has cooled. And they mentioned, for example, this is incredible. Florida natural orange juice was $1.99, I guess a quart, in
5 years ago.
5 years ago. It's $4.49 right now. Now, obviously, that's at the high end of the spectrum. Why is Boston having a rougher go in terms of grocery price inflation than the rest of the country, Corby Cummer?
Because of everything we believe in, which is keeping out monolithic national chains that drive small businesses out of business. Mm-hmm. The very idea that Market Basket, which we all love, headquartered in Tewksbury, beats for market share Walmart and Amazon. It's the triumph of the little guy, the fact that the two national supermarket chains, which themselves are comprised of like 17 each different supermarket brands, they seldom both can thrive in one urban area. They mm-hmm. both thrive in Boston with Stop and Shop in one, and I can't remember what the other main brand is, Shaw's, in another. So all these small and medium range businesses that fragment the market in a way we want to applaud because it's local, it's not Amazon and Walmart muscling in. But the Boston Globe piece says this is what's accounting for high prices, because those chains, including Aldi, which is super low priced and establishing itself in other urban areas but not Boston, they drive down prices and unfortunately drive out small businesses, but they give consumers a break by lowering prices. So this was a counterintuitive story.
So where does that leave us? I mean, should we be, you don't want to lose your small businesses. On the other hand, people are paying astronomical amounts of money for food. So what's the right route to follow here, Corby?
Hope that Aldi comes in, go out to Aldi, stiff your local market, and leave your leave the economic base for your neighborhood impoverished because you went to find lower prices at Aldi or a Walmart superstore.
By the way, I've been to Aldi in either Malden. I mean, no one likes a bargain more than I do. Aldi or in Malden, they're one of the M towns. It's overrated. It really is unimpressive. And there's also no feel. I mean, the beauty, I don't want to need to go into this in great length. The beauty of a place like Market Basket is you see how long the workers have been there. You know they're treated decently. There's like a community feel. And so it's easy for me as an upper middle class person to say I'm willing to pay that extra price. But you raise an interesting and unfortunate question, Marjorie, is what do you do if you can't afford to preserve that kind of community-based grocery?
So, Corby, we talked to you a lot about Republicans, and it generally is Republicans trying to cut down on government programs for the poor. I was stunned when I read this story about the latest effort involving Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which goes to a lot of young mothers with babies, that the average benefit is about $6 per day. You're not going to go wild on $6 per day, and yet they're trying to reduce even this or make SNAP even harder to get?
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the farm bill. So the tension over the farm bill, which is reauthorized every 5 years, is always between cities which need nutrition assistance. SNAP is 80% of the farm bill, and rural areas which don't particularly need it and don't want to have to pay for the urban areas what they consider unwarranted welfare. So the newest wrinkle that Glenn Thompson, the Republican chair of the House Ag Committee, are saying is that they want to roll back the Biden administration's updating of the Thrifty Food Plan, the TFP, which hadn't really been updated in almost 20 years and was updated in 2021. And that increased the maximum monthly SNAP benefit by 21%. This was huge. This was really important. And yet, let's not forget, or it's easy to forget, there were increases in SNAP benefits during COVID. When they were rolled back, a lot of people, including in New England, who were SNAP recipients, were thrown back into the poverty rolls because those extensions had expired. And they were back to that 2021 increase in SNAP benefits. The Republicans want to remove that 2021 recalculation and says that everything has to be based maybe on inflation, but it has to be cost neutral. Can't keep saying that money's that an average meal plan has increased, the price, and so therefore SNAP benefits should increase because it just makes the farm bill unmanageably expensive. It broke $1 trillion after the 2021 recalculation of the Thrifty Food Plan. So this is going to take food out of the mouths of many families if the Republicans succeed.
You know, so I have a question for you about this, the motivation here. I know the primary motivation in a situation like this is pandering to the donors, but there are also a lot of poor people in red states. And so are the members of Congress like this Thompson guy calculating that the poor person in my district who depends upon SNAP or food stamps is not going to understand that I am cutting the number of calories that we are helping to provide a day? I mean,
Well, they did it already with Medicaid expansion.
How do they get away with it, I guess, is the bottom line.
There are so many decades of evidence that people will vote against their economic interests.
Yeah, that is unfortunate.
Because they like the politics and stated aphorisms of their favorite politicians that, you know, you're asking an eternal question, especially in the U.S. in the past 25 years.
You know, by the way, before we leave this, I'm going to aggravate Marjorie because two things. One, she is not liking me telling a story that I've told before, even though I haven't told this one in a couple of years. And two, she doesn't like me telling a story that I've told before where she is the centerpiece of the story.
Okay, oh no.
So, Corby, that the great Jim McGovern, who there's nobody better Congress on food issues.
Here we go.
And by the way, Joe Kennedy got us the pledge that we're going to walk with Jim McGovern and him this year when they do that X number of mile walk around food insecure. Listen to Marjorie. But this is a much more interesting story. Jim McGovern, I believe once a year, the congressman, goes a week or something existing, eating only the amount of food that a food stamp budget would buy. So inspired by that, I think it was the first year we got here at GBH, we had a couple of people in, somebody from state government, I forget who it was, and an advocate, and they were existing, and they brought in the food, Corby, that they were able to buy with a food stamp budget to show how little they would have to exist on that week. Now, here's a quiz for you, Corby. When they brought in the bread and I think hummus or whatever else, the only food they were able to afford with whatever was available from food stamps that week, what did Marjorie do in response?
Say she'd rather go hungry?
She would not rather go hungry.
She ate some of the bread and the hummus.
So as a result, what happened
I got carried away.
People who
wasn't thinking.
She thought it was like a chef from a restaurant.
I didn't that it was all they were going to get to eat for the whole week.
Well, it wasn't all they were going to get to eat because they couldn't even eat that because you had eaten it.
I didn't eat it all.
That's a dramatic demonstration of literally taking food out of needy people's
mouths.
That's exactly what it was.
For the current Republicans.
Yeah, it was a terrible mistake on my part. I feel awful. But before we go, I have to talk about one more thing.
This is upbeat.
I mean, these microplastics that we talk about, you know, they're in breast milk, they're all over our bodies. Now we found out that they are in human testicles.
Yeah.
Which means counts that have already been falling for decades because of chemical pollution. We may all be wiped out pretty soon at the rate we're going between the chemicals and the microplastics. What's a man going to do?
You know, you're inviting some salacious replies.
Go right ahead.
Be very worried about his sperm count. So this is a correlation. Mm-hmm. It's really alarming to think that the microplastics that are everywhere in our body and in our cells are in parts of our body we thought we were protected.
Yes.
Exactly.
Here, you know, in the testes, which produce sperm and are producing less sperm.
Yeah.
There are probably other environmental factors that have been contributing to the fact that for decades, sperm counts have been falling in men. But the fact that this is in placentas, these microplastics, they're in breast milk, they're in human blood, they're everywhere and in the deepest oceans, it's very alarming. Now, the mechanism for microplastics leading to reduced sperm count, it'll be very good when scientists find that evidence. But the correlation is really strong. This is still correlation, and it's really alarming.
You know, by the way, you mentioned before Marjorie was giving life to the expression taking food out of the mouths of whatever.
Yep.
This gives meaning to the notion, that old question, is that microplastic in your testes, or are you just glad to see me? Have you ever heard that expression?
Yeah, but even if you're glad to see her, you still might not conceive. Yeah.
Well, that's a very good
point. Well, it's just been a grim week for things we didn't think would be in our bodies. After
what
that
else?
RFK story about RFK Jr. about the worm in his brain.
Oh, a worm in your brain, yeah.
Then we found out that billions of people have worms.
Let's go to the what to do about it question. So Europe is mandating, for example, paper containers for shrink wrap vegetables. Europe is doing a lot to reduce these microplastics.
Yeah, they're always way ahead of us.
We are.
The U.S. hasn't begun regulating that.
No.
Has anybody looked at their testicles to see how that's working out or not?
Well, you know, that would be an interesting visual.
Okay. It's we got worms and we've got microplastics. I don't
in
know
our
what
testicles,
else we got.
Yeah,
that's
head
right.
To toe
your
or
testicles.
Head to whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
Excuse me. Obviously not your testicles.
Exactly. I don't have
it's a little selfish for you to be saying.
Well, you know, if I were a younger woman, I'd be worried about
that's true.
Microplastics in breast milk. I mean, how horrible is that?
Enough of this.
Okay, but we're doing nothing about it.
Goodbye, Corby. And Corby, congratulations on your commencement speech.
Yeah.
It was great. Congratulations on being invited.
You
did a great job. Be well.
Corby Comer, thank you very much. And congrats as well.
Yep.
Corby is Executive Director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, a Senior Editor at The Atlantic, a Senior Lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. Okay, up next, Boston Globe travel writer Christopher Muser joins us to talk about his recent trip to Abu Dhabi, as well as the biggest cruise ship on Earth and airplane nastiness. People just cheek to jowl, trying to grab the overhead bags, shutting each other off at the baggage rack, all the disgraceful stuff going on airplanes. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH. We are broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library and streaming online at youtube.com/GBH News.